On the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Okay, my number matter. Here we go. Wow, it sounds like crap. Holy cow. I haven't spoken much today. I'm Dominic Catronio, fighting through the worst allergy season I have ever had. Today, I was looking forward to relaxing off day, play some golf, and it has not gone according to plan today, to say the least. But we're going to fight through it for the next 51 minutes and try to put a smile on your faces, because we all know the feeling, right? When you can't breathe, all you beg for is to be able to breathe again. It's all in my nose, and it's just, like, brutal. And look, honestly, Matt, if I turn it up any higher, I'm going to modulate. So I need you to put me up on your end there, because this is the loudest I can go without cracking my voice and sounding like Tommy Pickles or something. So the Brewers are off today, thank goodness for me, but back tomorrow for what should be a fun weekend, a big kind of litmus test weekend for the Reds, as Cincinnati will be coming to town for the first time this season. The Brewers have not seen the Reds since April, when things were very, very different for the Brew, but for the Brew crew. But one thing remains the same is their pitching injuries. We're going to do things a little bit differently today, given we didn't have a post-game show yesterday. Let's go ahead and relive yesterday's game here right off the bat. A fun win for the Brewers. It got stressful at the end, but Tobias Myers getting the start, he pitched very, very well, and the line gives him the win, obviously, but the Brewers really were not in this game until the sixth inning or so, when they finally gave him a chance and got to Chris Bassitt, or I should say they never got to Chris Bassitt. They got to the Blue Jays' bullpen. So let's start with a couple of key plays early in this game. A solo homer in the first inning. Second batter of the game, Davis Schneider hit a home run to right center field, which, you know, with all due respect to Tobias, what else is new, right? He's given up a homer in almost every start he has made this season. But what he really did a great job of is settling down from there. And he was commanding the strike zone, getting ahead in the count, not relying on swing and miss, but able to work around some traffic. The Brewers certainly had plenty of traffic, but had nothing going against Chris Bassitt. We pick things up in the top of the fourth inning. Bo Bichette flied out to center fielder Blake Perkins. That was on the first pitch. A lot of early swings against Myers in this one. Then old friend Daniel Vogelbach walked. With one out, George Springer was coming to the plate as the Blue Jays were already leading and trying to add more.
Springer lined out to the shortstop Adames in the second. The 0-1 pitch, swing, ground ball. Back up the middle for Terang. Fields it near the bag. Tag second one. Throws to first, two. Double play, 4-3. Springer grounds into it. Myers gets two for the price of one.
It was a seven-pitch inning for Tobias. His pitch count was very tidy by the end of the day. He threw a total of 66 pitches, 49 strikes, and we'll break down that decision coming up as well of why he was pulled so soon. But the Brewers still hadn't mustered a run against Bassitt, and he was finally done after five innings, leaving the bases loaded multiple times. It is the humor. It is the paradox for how good the team is with runners in scoring position. They are one of the worst teams in baseball with the bases loaded. But they finally got their opportunity in the sixth inning. And I had tweeted this. I said, man, when that valve breaks, it's going to explode. And sometimes I'm right. More often, I'm not. But what happened in the sixth inning was patented Brewers relentless baseball. The inning began with Jackson Churio. He ended up grounding out to third base. Ollie Dunn lined out to shortstop. So you blink, and there's two outs on just eight pitches. And you're thinking, all right, well, maybe it's one of those days where you're just totally snake-bitten here at the bottom of the order. Then it was Blake Perkins. He drew a walk. Then Bryce Terang singled. It put runners on the corners, and that relentless speed that always pops up, speed never has a bad day, as they say, showed up for the Brewers for their first run of the game.
But a big threat here with two outs. There goes the runner. The pitch is down and in, and he's going to get caught in a rundown, and the ball gets away from the shortstop, Bichette, and rolls into shallow right field. Coming down the line and scoring is Perkins. On his way to third goes Terang. Terang was trying to get caught in a rundown, and it was actually Kiner Falefa who cut in front of the bag to take the throw, and he didn't catch it cleanly, and it went off of his glove and deflected into shallow right field.
So that tied the game. Two pitches later, William Contreras still at the plate.
2-0 pitch, ground ball on the right side, into right field, base hit Contreras. Terang trots home, the Brewers lead it 2-1.
Remember when I said about that valve that it was going to burst? They still weren't done. How about Yelly?
And the pitch. Yelich, a bouncer on the left side. It's going to get under the glove of Clement and trickle into left field. Contreras around third. The Brewers have a 3-1 lead on an RBI single from Christian Yelich.
It was a short hop, tough play for Clement that he actually got a little piece of glove on it. I think he would have been better suited not even touching it because it deflected it away from the defenders into shallow left center field. The Brewers still weren't done. They're now leading 3-1. All of this with a two-out rally and the big bop from who else? Willie Adames.
High fly ball deep center field. Marcio's back. Track. Bye. Bye. Baseball. Willie Adames with an exclamation point here in the sixth. A two-run shot. It's 5-1 crew on Willie's 11th of the season.
446 feet away for Willie Adames. So they're up 5-1. Handed over to the leverage bullpen. Brian Hudson, no problem. Hobie Milner, no problem. Until the ninth. They went back to Hobie Milner to begin the ninth inning. A soft double to left field by Clement. A single through the right side by Horowitz. That made a run across, so that's 5-2. Schneider managed a single into left field. That put runners on first and second, and then went to get Trevor McGill. The first curveball McGill tried to throw, he spiked in the dirt, got by everybody, took out the double play, was still nobody out. Runners were on second and third, and the tying run was at the plate. Bo Bichette hit a ground ball single through the right side. They held Schneider at third to score another run. Then Danny Jensen took a walk. That put the bases loaded again. And the battle was George Springer, Alejandro Kurt, and then off the bench, Vlad Jr. George Springer would strike out on gas for McGill and then ultimately get him on the curve. Alejandro Kurt hit a ball that I'll break down in the next segment. I don't know how it didn't get out. 101 miles an hour off the bat, 30 degrees launch angle, which is very good, to dead center field on a hot day. Everything opened up, and it barely got to the warning track. For context, Willie's was 106 at 31 degrees. We'll break all those numbers down in a moment. But it was still a sacrifice fly that put the tying run on third base and ran on the corners for pinch hitter Vlad Jr., who was off the bench. He was supposed to have a day off, and McGill walked the plank with him.
Here's the 0-1. Fly ball out to center. Perkins back on it. Still back on it. Onto the warning track. Makes the catch. This ball game is over. The Brewers hold on. And they take 2-3 from Toronto. The final score here this afternoon. 5-4 crew. It got dicey in the ninth. But McGill kept his composure and got the Brewers through it. And the crew wins their 40th game of the season in thrilling fashion here on this Wednesday.
Lane Grindle on the call as the Brewers win the game and the series and make it into a happy off day today. So if you care about the standings, since it is now Father's Day weekend, which it's amazing how fast that popped up on us, the Brewers are still the only team above 500 in the division. They are 40-28, third best record in the National League, 6.5 games clear of the St. Louis Cardinals, who won earlier today. We'll have a later segment talking all about the out-of-town and what the rest of the scoreboard looks like. We'll also talk a little bit about William Contreras and what is concerning me about him, and we'll also break down those plays I said we're going to break down from Wednesday's game. Thanks for bearing with me today. I'm hanging in there. I got my tea here, and I'm already almost through it, so I might need to go make some more. Brewers Weekly will continue to preview the Reds this weekend. I'm fighting through allergies. 855-616-1620 is the phone number. 855-616-1620. You can text in. You can call in. Let's have a good time tonight and kind of help me out of the bullpen here, eh? All right, back with more after this on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
We're fighting through it. I think I'm going to go for the second helping of tea after this break. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers Weekly going until 9 o'clock this evening. With a plug nose and all, we're fighting through it, y'all. Then I'm going to go drown myself with some NyQuil and go to bed because, man, we got a big day tomorrow for Bill Schroeder, in case you missed it. We'll talk more about that at the end of the program. This segment, we're going to break down those plays I wanted to talk about as far as the dead baseballs because I know that's a kind of a sensitive topic these days. But first, let's get to the phone lines. 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. Let's get to Doug out in Baraboo. Doug, you're live here on Brewers Weekly.
Yeah, good evening, Dom. You need to get, I don't even know how to pronounce it, Plectacosone proportionate It's better known as Flonase, but you got to get it from a doctor. It's a prescription. You can't get it over the counter. It works wonders. Mm-hmm. Yesterday's game was fun. The night before, not so much. I wanted to comment on how much I enjoy Pat Murphy's press conferences. We're like almost 2.5 months now in, and I actually look forward to it. I don't want to compare managers, but towards the end and maybe a couple of years, I didn't even listen to Council's press conferences because I didn't, as a fan, I really didn't learn anything. You know, a couple examples with Murphy, you know, he explained why and how he used the relief pitcher to start those games to get the four outs. And then how he prepared young guys, you know, like Rodriguez the other day, how he prepared him and talked to him, getting into the game and said, hey, it's not about you, it's about the team. You get so much insight and it's so much enjoyable. And I wonder if that doesn't trickle down into the clubhouse. I have no idea. I'm not a manager, obviously, but it sure seems like a super feeling and from a fan's side. And I wonder if the players might feel the same.
It's noticed for sure, Doug, on the media side of things. Appreciate the call and the question. Todd Rosiak and Kurt Hoag did like an off day get to know us piece because they joked that they were desperate for content, but it seemed like it was a pretty big hit. And I obviously work with those guys on the beat here in Milwaukee. And one of the questions was exactly what you're asking: is like, is there a difference between Craig Counsell and Pat Murphy covering them? And they kind of left it alone, but they slid exactly what you're saying, Doug, into the paper. Now I'll go ahead and go on the record and say it's a massive difference. And I don't want to necessarily slam dunk say yes, it's a massive difference in a good way. Sometimes with Counsell, you got afraid to ask strategy questions because you knew what the answer was going to be. And that's part of the job that I think sucks. And people always ask, like, why don't you ask harder questions? Well, when we do ask harder questions to some people, not this isn't Counsell every time, but some people in baseball don't take well to that. Murph has handled tough questions. He has answered tough questions, just like any manager has. But with the smile and the smirk and kind of the, you know, I don't want to say old man experience, let's put it like that, of like understanding why you have to ask that question, he's going to spin it to protect his players and go on from that. None of us are ever trying to get you. You know, we just want an honest answer. And I'll never forget a clip from spring training. And the spring training media sessions with Pat Murphy were just completely something out of left field, pun intended, that I did not expect it. Because after dealing with Counts for so long, this was not what I was used to. And not that it was a bad thing either. That Counts was just kind of get to the business, get to the point. Here's who's dealing with something. Here's who's pitching. Here's who's in the lineup. Here's this. And then we'll ask like something random and then see you later, 10 minutes or less. Murph had been like 25, 30 minutes every session in spring training, talking from horse racing to Notre Dame football to the Dutch national team in the WBC, talking Arizona State, talking Lifesavers. I mean, you name it, he's talked about it. And it's been really fun to enjoy him and get to know him a little bit better. For me, personally, like, the press conferences are interesting, but I'm very grateful that I get to talk to him without a microphone in my hand, you know, and learn more about baseball from him and the entire coaching staff. And I did that with Counsell, too, and I really appreciate their time. That's why I think a lot of people were kind of coming at me of why how soft I was about Craig Counsell's return. Like, how are you shocked that he got booed? Like, well, he taught me a lot about baseball in his time here. I've only been here since 2021, so he was the only manager I had known. And then with Pat Murphy coming in, I had known Murph since I was in college. So this was kind of a best of both worlds for me. But good question there, Doug. Appreciate it. Real quick, I want to get back to the phone lines before we talk about what I said I was going to talk about with the dead baseballs and everything. The phone number is 855-616-1620. Dick up in Port. Dick, you're live here on Brewers Extra Innings.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've just got an observation I just thought of while you were talking about the differences between Murphy and Counsell, and I'm not trying to play psychiatrist here, but or psychologist, whatever. I noticed that Murphy, when he's in the dugout, he's in the background. Counsell was always up front. Maybe someone can analyze that. But my real question to you is, I don't understand what we're waiting for in trying to get more starting pitching by utilizing the glut we have in the outfield. What's the holdup? Let's trade some of these guys. We've got to get more starting pitching. Do you agree with me?
100%. Yeah, I agree entirely. The number one, if they go through the trade deadline adding no starting pitching, that's a recipe for disaster.
To trade some of these outfielders now when they're still looking good.
I get what
you're
saying.
You get my point?
There, yeah, for sure. I appreciate the call and the question. Here's what I'd say to that. It takes two to tango, right? Maybe offers are out there, and the other team has said no. You know, there's things that we just don't know yet as far as who's on the table, who's not on the table. Is Mizorowski going to be available? Is Brock Wilkin going to be available? Is Garrett Mitchell going to be available? Is Sal Frelick going to be available? You know, it's easy to sit here on your computer and do like a trade analysis or like the NBA trade machine, and now there's a future value calculator for baseball, which is okay. It's not super accurate, but it takes two to tango, and these are franchise-altering decisions, right? So let's look at the Marlins, for example, right? And this is how we'll wrap up this second, then we'll talk about the dead baseballs. The Marlins, they have all the pressure on them, quite frankly, as do the White Sox. And know what you're thinking, Dom, they're the worst teams in baseball. Why would there be pressure on them? They need to get this right, because their best assets, Garrett Crochet for the White Sox, and Eric Fetty, to that matter, and Jesus Luzardo, and maybe even Ryan Weathers, and maybe even A.J. Puck, and obviously their closer, Tanner Scott. They need to get them right, because otherwise they're going to be stuck in a perpetual rebuild. I know they made the playoffs last year. Look at me with a straight face. Tell me you were scared of the Marlins at any time last season. That wasn't a legitimate playoff team. I'm sorry. This is part of the expanded playoffs. I was more afraid of the Diamondbacks, and look what they did. They came into Milwaukee and took two out of three. But the reason why there's a holdup, it takes two to tango. And that's what we were saying all offseason, remember, with why haven't they traded Corbin Burns yet? Why haven't they traded Corbin Burns yet? Then they signed Rhys Hoskins, and then they trade Corbin Burns. Everyone's like, well, what do you mean? Timing's everything. It's just, I think it's going to be a matter of when, not if, for the Brewers. And I'm not saying it's going to be Crochet, Luzardo, or Fetty, or anyone like that. But I'm saying the Brewers have to make a legitimate signing, whether it's a trade, whether it's a blockbuster, whether it's something, to make sure they fortify their starting rotation, because they've still got about 7 weeks or so until the trade deadline, right? So we got 3 weeks left of June, 4 weeks of July, and then boom, that's your team moving forward. And one last note on this, I'd be shocked if Willy Adames was in any of those trade packages, truly, because I know Joey Ortiz has been playing great, and he seems like the shortstop of the future when Willy does depart, but I wouldn't give up Willie. He's part of this team. You got to let it ride. He's going to get the qualifying offer, and then you'll get compensation for that in the form of the draft. Okay, that went off the rails. Let's talk about the dead baseballs coming up next as I'm fighting through allergies here. Brewers Weekly rolls on, 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. On your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back, Dom Catronio. We're fighting through it. We're halfway home already, right? We got momentum. We're rolling downhill now. It's going to be okay. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620 is the phone number. This text, though, I have not heard if anyone has explained, is Bob Uecker retired? He doesn't do the home games either. Hope you feel or sound better soon, Dom. No, Uke's not retired. He is making his own schedule this season. Generally, we've not seen him do back-to-back games this season. He can make whatever schedule Bob wants, quite frankly. I understand folks want to hear Bob. He understands it too. But to make it through 162, sometimes you got to take a breather. And that's what Bob's been doing. Obviously, he's not traveling still, but they're just trying to see how he feels. Don't push it here in June as the months start getting hotter, and start giving him some days off. So I imagine he'll be on the air tomorrow for WTMJ and the Brewers Radio Network, and then maybe take Saturday off and be back on Sunday, and then the Brewers will get back on the road to take out West. Let's talk about the dead baseball thing. So this is a funny little conspiracy, and I've talked about it on Mondays with the Wisconsin Morning News guys, with Vince Vitrano and Eric Bilstad. Like, why are the Brewers getting so many home runs robbed by them? Well, in case you missed it, and this is silly conspiracy talk, let me disclaim this right off the top. None of this is proven. This is honestly dangerous for me to even be talking about it. Not like dangerous, like, oh my gosh, you're going to pull Dom off the air. But just like, it's silly in a way to give this attention. However, People thought everyone was silly in 2019 when they were suggesting something was wrong with the baseballs. And we look back and Major League Baseball confirmed that they messed with the baseballs in 2019 and had the juice baseball season. You know, the numbers are overwhelming. And it's also something to be clear about. Not every ball is deadened. And I think the perfect example is what happened in yesterday's game. And I know there's wind, and I know there's other atmospheric conditions that play a factor in all of this sort of stuff. But when I look at just the raw data, right, I'm a process-driven, data-driven, quantitative type of guy, but understand that there's room for variables. When you look at the difference between Alejandro Kirk's sacrifice fly in the ninth inning, and I was in the building, and off the bat, I said, that's gone. Oh, no. Grand slam. Oh, no. And to set the stage, 99 coming in, 101 going out at a 30-degree launch angle, that is a quote-unquote barrel. Okay, barrel means optimal launch angle and optimal contact. However, StatCast says it was only a home run in six ballparks as it flew 398 feet. Only a homer in Baltimore, Cleveland, Dodger, T-Mobile, that's Seattle, Lone Depot, Miami, and Nationals, Washington. Now, there's no way, in my opinion, if a ball is out at Lone Depot Park, one of the most pitcher-friendly parks in baseball, that that ball is not out to dead center field, to American Family Field. And I was thinking, Tom, why are you being so negative about this? Well, Willie hit it at 106, so 5 miles an hour more, at 31 degrees of launch angle. The launch angle is not a concern because they're virtually the same. And when you add every mile per hour of exit velocity, it equals about, say, 6 feet or so, depending on the launch, of course, of distance the ball is flying. So, in theory, yes, Dom, of course. He hit the ball harder. It's going to be a home run. That much further? 50 feet further? On 5 mile an hour difference? 106 to 101 at the same launch angle? And one was a slider and one was a fastball, so the only evidence would be that Kirk just did not square it up center-center. But by the sound and what I saw in the ballpark, I'm like, that ball's gone. But one thing that we do have on the way in baseball bat tracking is attack angle and being able to see exactly where on the bat the ball was hit and that sort of thing. So we could, you know, one day maybe go into the bat data and say, yes, that ball was hit just a hair off the toe, and he wasn't able to hit it. But one thing we do have with bat angle, there's a difference with the tat angle of two schools of thought, right? You've heard the swing down on the ball and the hit up on the ball. Which one creates more fly balls? Swinging down on the ball creates backspin, which helps the ball carry further. Swinging up on the ball may be harder to square up, but gives you guaranteed fly balls. Fly balls are the Goldilocks of balls in play because they're generally hit for damage, and they generally go very far. And everyone's chasing fly balls. Kirk's attack angle was a negative attack angle, meaning he was slightly hitting down on the baseball. Not significant enough to say there's no chance this ball is going to get out. Willie's was a positive attack angle, meaning he was swinging up on the baseball at 8 degrees. So maybe that had something to do with it as well. I'm not going to sit here and say unequivocally, yes, the baseballs are deadened. I did kind of tweet it, but look, I know people in the ballpark felt the same way. Like, how did that ball not get out? And the Brewers will take it and run with it. The last thing I want to talk about in yesterday's game, the schoolyard play, and I tweeted this, at @Dom_Catronio. The schoolyard play is what I call when they have runners on the corners, they send the runner from first, then he stops between first and second so they can send the runner from third home. The Brewers have done that a handful of times this season. And furthermore, it's on tape, right? This is what scouts do. They get ahead of the team and getting to see them, or they're looking at other games, or looking at other tape. They're keeping an eye on them all season long. I don't know how that play slipped through the cracks for the Blue Jays' advanced scouting department, because, furthermore, it's no secret that the offense was struggling to score runs. They were 0 for 24 at that point with runners in scoring position in the whole series until William finally poked the single through the right side. So you knew they were going to try to create some sort of havoc. They had their two best base runners aboard with Perkins and Turang. I just am shocked that they didn't see it coming. And furthermore, that they executed so poorly. That means the way they executed that play showed me that the Blue Jays had no idea it was coming. No conversations about it, no pregame meeting about it, that, hey, the Brewers might do this depending on the personnel on the field. The ball gets away. Terrain gets a third. Perkins scored easily. Double steal. Ho-hum. They're going to keep doing it until they're caught. I mean, they've only been caught, I think, once this year. And this is their brand. They're relentless. They try to get it done. And with two outs, that's a perfect opportunity to do it. Maybe they were shocked because William Contreras was at the plate. We're going to talk about William in the next segment. The Brewers know William's kind of running low on empty right now. He's trying to make it through the rest of June because it has not been pretty for him this month. So to put some action on, get some momentum to your side, I thought was a great call by Pat Murphy and by the Brewers to tie the game at the time, and then they never looked back. Brewers won yesterday 5-4. Let's talk about Wild Bill, the baby bull, William Contreras. That's coming up next here on Brewers Weekly on 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's talk a little about William. 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. William Contreras, best catcher in baseball? I still think so. But there's something happening lately. Not quite getting the same launch, not quite getting the same oomph into the baseball as of late. He still hits the ball hard, but he hits a lot of ground balls all of a sudden. So we can look at this on Baseball Savant, and I wish I could screen share this with you, but obviously this is a radio program, and this isn't how, but this is how I do my job when I'm over on Bally, or when I'm with TBS, when I'm on the road. I can go into Baseball Savant and go into a bunch of different categories and timestamps and figure out what is going on by month for William Contreras. So let's start with a couple of things. We're doing this live on the radio together. William Contreras' hard hit rate for the first 2 months of the season was on par with each other. He was sitting at 56% through March and April, 56.2% in May, and then has dipped down to 49% here in June. I know what you're thinking, Dom, that's not a big difference. That's, what, 7 points? I get that. But furthermore, what he hit on those hard hit balls tells us a little bit more. In the first month of the year, he slugged .534. on balls that were quote-unquote hard hit, meaning they were 95 miles an hour or above. He also hit 5 home runs. He had an average launch angle of 6 degrees, which isn't super high, but still pretty good. Then in May, he was really getting it going. .301 average, .469 slug. So yes, he took a step back, but he still hit 3 homers, and he increased his average launch angle to 9 degrees. Good things, all good things. But here in June, on hard hit balls, he's hitting .209 with just a .256 slugging because his average launch angle is -3, meaning he's averaging hitting a ground ball. Well, how could that be? Dom, he's the best catcher in baseball. I thought he was going to do this forever. Of course. No, it's not going to happen forever. It's really hard to hit in the big leagues. Teams make adjustments to you. So that's when we go in and say, okay, let's just look at the frequency of certain pitches here. Is he seeing a different pitch group more often than others now? And is he struggling with a certain pitch group? He's actually seeing slightly more fastballs. He is still staying patient with those. But he is still seeing a hearty amount of breaking balls. It's been virtually the same month over month for the amount of pitches that he has seen. Fastballs and breaking balls. A few less off-speed, but that's changeups. That's like right on right changeups. We're facing a lefty, facing a changeup there. But again, the worry is the lack of slug for William here in the month of June. And we've talked about it, how he hasn't had many days off. He had just snapped a streak of 101 consecutive games started going back to last year. And I'm hoping he can sit down, and I know he wants to play every day, and it's a beautiful thing. And this is where we have to walk that fine line as baseball people, right? We want players to play every day, post every day, be great. Well, it's a catcher. It's just physically impossible. He's had one day off this year. Hopefully with these off days coming up, given they were off today, they'll go out west. They'll play 3 this weekend against Cincinnati, then 3 in Anaheim, 4 in San Diego, but then no off day coming back to play Texas. So they're about to begin on another long stretch here. But then off day in 2 weeks, in 2 Thursdays, an off day the following Monday leading into the All-Star break, and then All-Star break is 5 days for the Brewers because they play the Twins after the fact. I would not be shocked if we see an off day, especially if the Brewers win the first 2 games of this series against the Reds. I haven't even looked at their rotation yet. If the Brewers win the first 2 games of this series, I would give William a day off on Sunday. start to make it a little more consistent for him. Give him the JT Realmuto treatment where, look, man, I know you want to play every day just like JT does, but I got to find a spot for you. And maybe you start keeping him fresher because it's cool to post in June. All the Brewers really care about is him posting in October if they make it that far. So that's my little monitoring about the amount of ground balls that William has been hitting. He has not hit a home run this month. He has struck out about the same rate. It's just not as much quality contact for him. But here in the month of June, he's hitting 209. He is 9 for 43. You look at last June when he was still trying to break in to be, yes, I'm an everyday player. I'm an everyday catcher. Stop playing Caratini over me. Last June, he also scuffled. Heck, he scuffled in May last June to a 194 average despite having five homers. So maybe this is just a normal trend for him at this point in the season saying, ah, just need a little blow. Once I get through the All-Star break, once I get through July, everything's good from there. We're not even at dog days yet. But I think William's going to be A-OK. That's just some of the things that we're monitoring because the Brewers need pop from him and some serious slug from him and from Yelich, who's only hit one home run since he came off the injured list. Yes, he's getting on base, which is great. But the Brewers do not have any lefty power without Christian Yelich. Let's talk about some roster moves and some injury updates as well. Some big night down on the farm. Talk about that coming up next here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
We're fighting through it. We're almost there. I can see the finish line. Mind over matter. I'm Dominic Catronio. Do not feel well, but we're almost there. Maybe tomorrow, you know, just sleep it off. I'm one of those people, and if you're listening, you know this, or maybe you know somebody or in your family that's like this. I'm one of those people that just goes, and then, boom, I hit a wall, and it's like, hey, Dom, listen to your body, man. Like, take a breather. So I think my body's trying to tell me something. Like, I wear a Whoop. If you're not familiar, it's like a fitness tracker. And it's really intuitive. I've worn it since 2020. The players wear it now, too. The whole team has a Whoop band either on their ankle or on their upper arm just to keep them in tip-top shape. But it gives you a recovery score every morning. And it's on a 0 to 100 scale. So anything above 67%, so two-thirds, is considered green. You're in the green. You're good. You're more than half recovered. Well, more than half been covered, and you should be fine for the day. Anything but under 66 to 34% is considered yellow. It's like, hey, you could be better, but hey, it's not worse. Anything 33% or below is red. Like, dude, shut it down. Do not do anything today. And that generally happens. You know, like the way they market it is, you know, drinking too much or not getting enough sleep or that sort of thing. Well, I had nothing to do with that yesterday. No sort of tomfoolery of that. Didn't sleep well last night. And then, boom, I wake up. 3% recovery. So we're fighting through it today. Speaking of guys fighting through it, how do I like that segue, right? Going into the injured list, okay? Some guys playing in AAA right now as the Brewers have a really big day down there in Nashville with Garrett Mitchell, D.L. Hall, and J.B. Bukauskas all scheduled to appear in today's game. I am pulling up the box score as we speak. Right now they're in Gwinnett taking on the Braves AAA affiliate down in northern Georgia. It is 8-4 Gwinnett. As for the guys that you worry about, D.L. Hall, he was on a strict pitch count today. He only threw 25 pitches, only 12 were strikes. Two-thirds of an inning, two hits, two runs, one walk, one strikeout, and also a home run. Home run was hit by Alvarez Jr. Is that who I think it is? No, Nacho Alvarez. He's been around the block for a little bit in the minor leagues. And so he hit a home run. DL is just restarting from his second diagnosis on his knee. Velo sat at 94 miles an hour for the fastball. This is the first of probably a handful more for DL to return. As for Bukauskas, he just got into the game. His first game action back. One inning, two hits, one run that was earned, no walks, and no strikeouts. Bukauskas threw 20 pitches, only 10 strikes. So you get a theme here. Guys are a little rusty coming off the injured list. And then finally, Garrett Mitchell also had his first game in AAA today after coming from the rookie complex, Arizona, getting out of the 115-degree heat. Garrett today is 1-for-4 with a bloop double, no strikeouts. He's put the ball in play all four times about the play. He also exposed the Jets a little bit. He had a sprint speed at 29.6 in his first at-bat of the day. So he'll get what Pat Murphy says is somewhere in the 30 to 40 at-bat range on this rehab assignment. He is still hoping to join the team at some point next week on the West Coast. but maybe something a little more realistic is when the Rangers are in town to make sure he's 100% ready to go. That's your quick little injury update here, and we'll get ready to say goodbye after this on 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, last couple minutes. Appreciate y'all bearing with me here today on the pod or on the radio. The Brewers get ready to welcome in the Reds. It's a big series because the Brewers are already 2-1 against Cincinnati this year, and they have a doubleheader looming after the trade deadline, and that'll be in Cincinnati in August. As the Brewers, they get ready to go Cincinnati now, and then they'll see Cincinnati again in early August, August 9th, 10th, and 11th, another weekend here in Milwaukee, a lovely city, mind you. And then the four games in 3 days, the 30th, the 31st, and the 1st. The Reds are playing better baseball right now, and they're a hot and cold team. They're very reminiscent of Team Streak right now here in the month of June. They are 8-3. You go back to their Dodgers sweep is what really got them going. They got swept by the Dodgers in L.A. in mid-May. Then they faced them again a week later at home, and they swept them right back. They were 21-30 at that time. They're now 12-5 since the start of that series. Of course, Ellie De La Cruz is the straw that stirs the drink, as they say. Ellie, batting average isn't much to be desired, but we don't grade guys just by batting average anymore. Leads baseball in stolen bases. He also leads baseball in strikeouts. So it's a feast or famine type guy with Ellie De La Cruz. He is going to be very tough for the crew. Looking ahead to what the predicted rotation will be, always subject to change. It should be Freddy Peralta tomorrow for the Brewers against Hunter Green. Bryce Wilson on Saturday against Andrew Abbott. And then Sunday, Colin Ray against Frankie Montas. So both teams are going after it with their best. Games will begin tomorrow night at 7:10. Right here is first pitch. Coverage will begin at 6 with Brewers warm-up. Then on Saturday, it is at 3:10. And on Sunday, at 1:10. My thanks to our producer, Matt Yazel. I'm Tom Cotroneo. Keep on swinging.